October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. If you haven't already, please watch and share Misty's domestic violence video, Escape. The link is on our Facebook page. Thanks in advance for doing your part to support this worthwhile cause.
Oh man! I'm so excited that you're back for another week, Mr. Maven! I worked up a puppet show and I want to show it to you, I see.
Certainly.
He wants to see my show. He's really excited. You can hear it in his voice. Okay, come here. Now, I put the puppet on my lap just like this, and then I put my hand up in the back and watch this. How do you like school, Super Rika?
Closed. What a terrible job this is. Take your hand off me.
Hey, if you don't stop complaining, you're going back in the wax vat.
As a specialist in magic of the mind,
yes.
And yet a member, a skeptic, renowned skeptic, because one of my questions here was, what are your opinions of psychic powers? But you've already given that to us, and so
I crossed
that off my, huh?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay, well, good, then that's the first question. What are your opinion of real psychic powers? But the second follow-up to the question is, do you have them? And also, if not, how do you prefer to be built to walk that ethical?
Okay, well, first of all, I
also, can you tell them about JREF's challenge?
Yeah.
I know that's something totally aside.
Sure, JREF has a $1 million challenge.
Which is an extension of Houdini's work, right?
Not only Houdini, but others, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been various magicians over the years who have taken an adversarial stance toward psychics and the like, and Houdini was certainly very prominent in that regard. Mm-hmm. And Randy, in more recent times, has been the most associated with that sort of position. And Randy's been offering a cash prize for a long time, but over the years, he got people to fund this. So initially, he was offering something like $10,000 of his own money many years ago, and now it's underwritten so that it's now $1 million prize.
That's crazy.
If you can demonstrate something that it's not as simple as all that. You have to introduce your claim. The claim has to be vetted, so a committee, and I've been a marginal consultant on a couple of these, but the claim has to be considered as to whether it's something that really would be considered
magical,
paranormal, or supernatural. And assuming it is, they do an initial test is set up. The initial test is not for the $1 million. The initial test is to determine whether or not it passes that basic scrutiny that would lead to the real test.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anybody's made it past the first test.
Do you know how many people have tried?
I don't. They get an awful lot of people declaring that they're going to try, but who then don't actually fill out the paperwork.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that. I was talking to someone about that from a philosophical perspective after a seance I did a couple, it last Wednesday or something? And the woman said, well, because she asked if I was a real psychic, and I don't hedge it at all. And I said, no, I'm not.
But
I cannot help
you
find your child's bones. I cannot. This is a show. That is what you saw. It was a theatrical seance. And she said, well, if you really could, would you come forward and do that challenge? And I said, no. And she said, why? And I said, because $1 million isn't enough to buy my life. And she said, that's an interesting perspective. And I said, anyone who legitimately had, depending on what their supernatural ability or X-Man power was, would, their life would change immediately, depending on how the general public desired the use of that power for their own gain.
I don't think the $1 million challenge fits, you know, one size fits all. I don't think it fits everyone who might believe that they have a legitimate claim to it.
Right.
I can certainly see legitimate reasons why someone would say, but I don't want to do it. That said, there are certainly a lot of people who make pretty big claims and clearly want the publicity and yet still don't want to be tested. You asked me earlier if I believe in psychic phenomena.
Yeah.
And I'll answer that as follows. First of all, I'm not a psychic myself. I have never used that word in any billing of my work, except once in one brochure. I once used the term psychic comedian in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time that word has ever been generated from me. I don't believe that most of claims regarding psychic phenomena and psi or whatever terminology you want to use, I think most of those claims are pretty lame. There are a few that I'm not willing to shut the door on. I think the Ganzfeld experiments seem to work. If they work, what they indicate is something fascinating and not very useful. I don't know if you know what the Ganzfeld experiments are. Well, the Ganzfeld experiments were, I believe they were started by Charles Honorton, who was one of the few psychic researchers of the 20th century who was not brusquely dismissed by skeptics, because he was very harshly critical of his own field and held himself and his work to higher standards than most of the people in the field, who more often than not have been, it would appear, have been sloppy and self-fulfilling in some of the results. The Ganzfeld experiments are as follows. There's someone designated as a receiver, and then there is one or more people designated as sender. The receiver is put into a sensory-deprived state, which is to say, he or she is put into a reclining chair that's very soft and padded, with half ping pong balls over the eyes and earphones with white noise, so that it's the equivalent of a sensory deprivation tank, that type of situation, except not as wet. While they're in this state, and they go into an alpha state, a meditative trance state, simultaneous with this, the sender or senders are somewhere else. And in some versions of the test, they're down the hall in another room. In some versions, they're in a different building or even further away. And they are given four images. Now, in some versions of the test, the images are on printed cards, you know, pieces of cardboard, photos, let's say. In others, they might be video images. But there are four of them. That part seems to be consistent, and one of them is determined genuinely by chance. Don't ask me the precise procedure, because I don't think it's always the same, but if we are to believe that this is done legitimately, and I believe it is, then one of them is determined by chance, and the sender or senders concentrate on that image for like 20 minutes while the receiver is in an alpha state. This done, someone goes and wakes up the receiver, not one of the senders. Someone who doesn't know which image is being transmitted. Wakes up the receiver, take off the earphones and the ping pong balls and sit them up. And they say, when you were in that alpha state, what did you see? Because when people go into that trance state, they basically start hallucinating. It's kind of a dream state. So they said, describe what you saw. And now what they describe is recorded, whether audio, video, or transcribed by into notation, it is recorded. Now, this description, which might involve 20 images, you know, but the receiver's description, along with the four images in no particular order, are all given to a committee, a separate committee, that knows nothing. They go over the transcript or the recording and look at the four images, and they don't, it doesn't have to be a match. The hallucinatory description might not cover any of the four images. But based on that information, they say, okay, based on these various feelings and descriptions in the in this recording, we think it was this image. Now, if you did this purely by chance, it would be right 25% of the time.
Yeah.
It's very easy to work that out, right?
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And it turns out that with the Ganzfeld experiments, it comes in at over 30%, which is statistically phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does this mean? Assuming that this holds up to scrutiny, and it has been replicated over many years, and there are critics who've said, oh, you need to tighten up that protocol, or you need to fix this, but thus far it seems to the best of my knowledge, and I'm not an expert on this, but as far as I understand, it has actually held up to tighten security and so forth. So if this is true, that this somehow works, that there's something happening here, what does it mean? Well, I'll tell you my interpretation. Assuming that there's not some sort of falsehood built into this that hasn't been uncovered, which is always a possibility, but assuming that's not the case, this suggests that there might be some vestigial remnant of an ability that may have existed in our species aeons ago, before language, when we were in an earlier state of evolution, and when communication was a different ballgame. Now, what is the value of this? Well, if it can only be used for this arduous testing circumstance where over the course of a procedure that takes well over an hour, you can raise the odds of 1 in 4 to about 1 in 3, it's not a very useful ability, right? I mean, assuming that it is what it is, and assuming, and thus far nobody seems to have said, yes, and we can refine it, yes, and we can, now that we found it, we can improve it and make people better at it. So it may be the equivalent of the trace elements of iron that are in your nose.
He's saying that as though no one in the room will know what he's talking about.
No, I didn't assume that.
Oh, okay, because I do. Do you can use your nose as a compass?
Yes, I heard that.
Most human beings, apparently it's not 100%, but right, the vast majority of human beings have trace ferrous elements in their noses,
mm-hmm,
for which there is no purpose.
I don't know if I do anymore.
For which there is no active purpose.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
You can, in fact, get someone very dizzy and spatially confused by holding a really powerful magnet, like an electromagnet, up to their head.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
So there's enough of a trace element of iron in there to do that. But it has no real function. There's not enough substance in there to do anything. But you know where more greater quantities of this type of substance are found?
Where?
In the beaks of birds.
Interesting.
Because they gotta fly south,
yep,
for the winter.
Hmm.
And science still does not 100% understand how birds are able to travel so accurately to their southern quarters and then to come back. That's still not fully understood. But it does seem that the ferrous contents of birds' beaks is probably a part of that relative to the magnetic poles of the Earth. So it may very well be, in fact, it makes perfect sense that at some point in our own evolution, the evolution of our species, that at some point, hundreds of thousands of years ago,
we had
greater amounts of ferrous material, and we did make some sort of compass-like use of that to help not get lost in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. So it may be that if the Ganzfeld experiments are really what they appear to be, and so far I have not seen them refuted, it doesn't mean that they're legit. It yeah. simply means that they are not, so far as I know, they have not been negated.
So we're not talking about something necessarily supernatural, but something that no, we have that is simply fallen.
There may have been some sort of facility, which we would call supernatural now, because yes. it isn't within our natural abilities
right.
now. But it may have been that hundreds of thousands of years ago, mm-hmm. an earlier version of our species had some ability to communicate that we've lost the need for, because we figured out how to talk.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very much like wisdom teeth going the way of the dodo.
Well,
so we're evolving out of wisdom teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kids are being born without them. I'm sorry, Max, run around.
I know, but I had to suffer through them, so.
I did too.
I think kids mm-hmm. should have to.
I had mine pulled out one at a time on my lunch hour.
Oh.
Charming.
Yeah, I had different lunch hours. Well, so, I worked at a dental office, remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. So he was like, pop in the chair, I'll numb you up and pop it out.
I still have my top ones.
Ooh, lots of people do.
So I'm not ready to make a definitive statement that psychic stuff doesn't exist at all. The existence or the apparent existence of things like the Ganzfeld effect suggests that maybe there is something there. It also suggests that, as far as I can tell, if there is something there, it is so vestigial and so minor in its effectiveness that it becomes a fascinating mm-hmm. thing, like the existence of the appendix,
mm-hmm. yes.
but doesn't have much function in our current lives. But I'm not quite so quick to say completely no to everything that falls into the range of psychic, even though I don't particularly like the word.
Mediums included?
Well, I don't personally believe in life after death, but I'm not so presumptuous as to think that I know everything that's going on out there. So I'm not saying that I believe in ghosts, because I don't. But are there weird experiences that people have that don't easily get explained? Yeah, I think that's true. Do I live my life on that premise? No, I live my life on a pretty mundane premise as to how the universe works. But I used to say on the radio a lot when I was doing the comedy clubs, I used to be interviewed on the radio a lot, and I would get asked the question, you know, what do you believe and so forth. And the catchphrase I used to use at that time was, the Max Maimon philosophy is, you should be skeptical of everything, but accept the possibility of anything. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're cutting off mm-hmm. your options. So although I'm not particularly mystically inclined, I think there's a lovely aesthetic to mysticism, but I don't buy much of it. But I'm not particularly threatened by it, and I'm not jumping to negate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's
if that makes any sense.
It absolutely does to me, because years ago, and I'm about as skeptical as they come, you know, mm-hmm. as far as that stuff, and brutally honest. And years ago, and Paul will attest to this, I could not stop smelling cigarettes. I woke up in the middle of the night and said, what the hell is that? You remember mm-hmm. this? Yeah. And I couldn't stop smelling it. And I was like, this is my family, because everyone in my family
is going to have a creepy ending.
This happens to me with my grandmother.
Yeah, it's a very, very heavy smoker. And I was just like, I told Paul, I was like, this is stupid. There's no cigarettes. I had not visited home. Yeah. I didn't know why. And I could not get the smell out of my nose. And I said, I got to start calling people and making sure they're all right. So I called my grandmother, and she answered the phone and said, no, I'm fine, sweetheart, but thank you for calling. I called my dad, and he goes, no, we're all right, but that's really cool that you called, and it's nice yeah. to know that you're thinking of us, even if it is 3 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning. and then I called my sister, and I got no answer. And I called her again, and I got no answer. And I called her again, and I got no answer. And I thought, well, they must be asleep, and I'm bothering them now, so I'm going to let them sleep. Well, it turns out that my nephew was choking in his crib. And when I called, it woke my sister up, and she heard the gurgle. And they called 911, and they said, put him in the freezer right now. And the baby was suffering, he had croup. And he was, and he was all swelled up. And they said, put him in, they could hear, they said, play this.
Cue the theremin.
Yeah.
We had the same thing with Muggsy.
Yeah, that same thing. Yeah, that same thing happened to me again. And so, well, it was different, but I'll tell that story in a second. But they put the baby in the freezer, and then they took him to the ER, and he lived. He was fine. And I'm not saying that had anything to do with me. That's yeah, because it reduced the swelling enough to let air in, so he wasn't choking anymore until they could get him to the ER.
Freezer kid,
freezer baby.
Until he can
his face. Put his face. Let him breathe in the freezer. I don't know. I wasn't. I just, you know, my sister was like, oh my God, it was so weird. You woke me up, and if you hadn't, he would have died.
Wow.
So, you know, and it wasn't as dramatic as all that.
For legal reasons, I think you should say that the listeners to this podcast should not put their babies
in
the
freezer. Yes,
without
you.
Specific.
Marinade?
Instruction from a medical professional.
Oh, see, yeah. I was going to say that.
Or a chef.
Or a marinade, yeah. So, yeah. But the with Muggsy, a couple years ago, I was out in the woods. When I was taking my lie detector training, it was up in June Lake, California. And I was up there for, was it 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Forever. I was very sick. And a woman from Australia said, we have these cold pills in Australia. It'll knock you on your butt, but it'll help you. And she gave them to me. And I also took NyQuil as I was going to sleep. And when I went to sleep that night, I was very restless, and there was a line right down my consciousness of purple twilight, like sparkly purple and jet black. And I was fighting with myself. I wanted so desperately to go jet black, because it was gonna be so restful and oh my God.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, I can't do that. I can't. And so I'm fighting with myself, a very fitful sleep. My cell phone rings. And I woke up and I was groggy and I couldn't even make a sentence. He hung up, and it was Paul, and he hung up, and he called back, and I finally was like, ugh! And I picked up the phone, and I couldn't even, like, I was inarticulate, and I was not even speaking English, and he said, there's something wrong with the dog, and I said, what's wrong with the dog? And he goes, he's pacing, and he won't relax, and he's just a mess, and he goes, and I don't know what to do, and I said, okay, well, and I was starting to come to as I was talking to him, and I said, tell me what he's doing, and as Paul was talking to me, and I was becoming more coherent, this dog was calming down. And Paul said, I to this day.
More theremin.
Right? Whoa! So, you know, but I mean, it was just like, I still don't believe in that stuff, but those are cool things that happen.
Yeah, well, Muggsy made the theremin sound just now, so.
Oh, well, that's gross. Yes, I smell it. Thank you.
Oh, no, I meant
But those are cool things that happened, but I certainly wouldn't call myself, I definitely wouldn't call myself a psychic. It's just cool, coincidental, like some kind of survival cue. I don't know if it's even connected or if it's just some weird, you know, like, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy that I'm choosing to promote because these events happened so close to each other? Why did I smell cigarettes that day? I don't know. You know, that baby doesn't smoke. You know, like it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But that series of events was fortunate for the baby. You know, that day.
Yes, it certainly was.
That series of events was likely fortunate for me because I don't know what.
And
you know.
Ultimately, and again, this is my personal take. It's not advice for anybody. But to me, it's okay not to know.
Yeah.
You know, my theater show, the full title of my theater show is Max Maven Thinking in Person. An Evening of Knowing and Not Knowing.
Nice.
And you still haven't
seen... When are you bringing
that?
No, I haven't, because we were going to fly to New York to see you. When is it? When are you next there?
I don't know.
Is this a Sandy question?
No.
Sandy was his
producer. No, because I've done the show in L.A. I did a run at the Steve Allen Theater here in L.A.
That's where I first broke the show in. With Amit?
Amit Itelman, who is the...
Oh, Amit! I know
who directed my show, and who also is the artistic director.
Is it Amit or is
my
uncle
that
a show there as
Steve
well?
Allen.
But you and my uncle are parallel. You follow each other everywhere. It's crazy.
You know, I can't help.
So what is the next performance of your evening show? We don't know yet.
I don't know.
Okay.
The last performance was in Stockholm. Where were you?
You need to stop traveling so much.
Dropping you off at the airport. That's where I was.
Here's the one thing I sort of believe in, as far as all this goes, is that I believe that the perception of the world around us doesn't end with man. I believe that there's more going on that we are capable of perceiving, and I don't know what difference that makes. If it's something that's going on in the world that we exist in.
Like Green Lantern's guardians?
Well,
See, I'm trying to speak to you, Paul,
to that
on a comic book level. Did you know, you must know this, that the guardians image was based on?
Who? What? No.
The image of the Guardians, the
little blue guys, yeah.
Blue guys, was based on Ben Gurion.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
That's funny. I'll buy that, yeah, yeah.
What's the pig's name? Kilowog.
Kilowog, yeah.
Kilowog.
What I think of... Oh,
it's,
man.
It's a pig, right?
Oh, that hurts.
Why does that hurt? He's a pig. He's not...
He's an alien.
He's a pig.
Who's a pig?
He's a pig. Kilowog.
Kilowog is one of the Green Lanterns.
I have no idea what you... Oh.
He's one of the Green Lanterns.
His own says poozer a lot. Yeah.
He's a pig. You know what he's supposed to say? Oink.
Yeah, okay.
He's a pig.
But here's the thing. It's like the world is a big place. It can also be a small place. But it's all... But when you think of all the creatures on the Earth and how we all share the same space, and man kind of looks back at everything. Like, say we look at, the sloth in South America. You know, he's sitting hanging in a tree, and all he really cares about is when it's going to rain again, what leaves are good to eat, and staying away from, things that will eat.
You don't know that's all the sloth cares
and
thinks about.
Let's presume.
Okay, because I was just going to say, I was just reading a study where they're putting dogs in MRIs, and dogs' emotional processes are very similar to humans, that they process things very similarly emotionally to the way that we do. They're able to put them in MRIs unanesthetized. They're training these dogs, and their trigger sensors, they process them almost identically to the way that toddlers up to 5 years old process.
Right.
And so they're saying not necessarily that the intelligence is there. It's not like you can teach a dog.
Right,
how
but the basic...
But our instinctive
attitudes,
like the emotional complexity, I guess, is what they're trying
right.
to show, that a dog experiences is very much like that, not just to an infant, which is what everybody thought, but actually up to a child of 3 to 5 years old.
Right.
And so that what they're trying to do is extend dogs' rights doing this, and they're years down the road from doing it,
yeah.
with neuroscience
right.
beyond property.
Mm-hmm. Whereas cats have no emotional complexity.
No, they do.
No,
just,
they have no emotional complexity, but it's all intellectual savagery.
Yeah, exactly.
Your cat is the most beautiful creature.
But
spectacular.
But that's
but
why
she's emotionally so simple.
She just wants what she wants, and that's it.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, she's perfect. She's
but
beautiful. Max has a cat named Moga, and she's gorgeous.
What kind of cat?
She hates you.
She is technically a Torkie with white.
Oh.
And this is what they call her style.
She tried to bite me once. She broke skin once.
People assume that I must have a black cat, but as I've explained...
You would never find her.
I would never find her.
I'm sorry, I stepped on your joke.
You'd have to go in and you'd have to keep telling jokes in order to see her smile.
Yeah.
But that's why I chose an animal that doesn't have much contact with people. You know, the sloth?
Yeah.
Okay. So the sloth, you know, leaves are good, snakes and jaguars bad, you know, and you know, but he's content to be as he is. But he shares the same world with, you know, other animals that he'll never know the existence of. Like he just will never see.
You mean other animals from other different
like an elephant like
environments that
yes.
they won't bump into one another.
Right, and he'll never know.
How do you know they're not having sentient conversations?
I'm presuming.
All right.
This is my presumption.
All
and right, it may
this
be
is
a
like
presumptive
Joe Alasky
presumption.
And Max Maven.
But
they'll never run into each other.
He'll never
run into similar circles.
They're all there.
No, he actually, I showed Max a picture of Joe and he said, yes, he knows exactly who he is.
Oh,
and
but here's
sure
the thing. You may go to South America and you may take a movie of the sloth and that is recorded, and then you as a human being have that image on your camera and you might have an understanding of how the camera works and
mm-hmm.
And then you put that image on TV and how the TV works and everything like that. And you take that a step farther than he does. So you are understanding things in a whole different realm than it goes on far beyond the sloth's realm of experience,
mm-hmm.
which is the tree that lives in, let's just assume.
Sure, sure.
To all these other things that you know, and say you're taking your special and it's showing on a PBS and it's being hosted by... You know, a famous actor who you've seen in a play,
sure.
who has performed the work of Shakespeare or something like that, you know more than he does in this area. So what's beyond the human being?
So
what makes
what's
the human being look like the sloth?
So
who is to you as the sloth is...
Who are
the
to
sloth
who
is to you
yeah.
as to you are to whoever...
Yes.
That...
Yeah, exactly.
Other level of being is.
I feel like there's got to be something. And I don't think it's God. I don't think it's really... I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the wind. I don't know if it's thunder or lightning that we can only perceive as something like that. It's trying to figure out
what... Are we somebody's ant farm, essentially, yeah, is what you're saying.
It's like trying to visualize the color Quilb, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know what Quilb is.
But you know who can see it?
What?
The friggin' manta. What is that thing? What is that thing? It can see like 160 different colors. It's terrifying. The manta shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
The
yeah,
murderer the of the shrimp. Sea, yeah, and it punches it
yeah,
like
yeah.
at the speed of sound. That thing is nasty.
See, that
it's beautiful.
Me.
Do you know what if it is, Max? The manta shrimp?
Yes.
Terrifying.
If we could have knowledge
but
of,
awesome.
Of the color Quilb, which is a random term I just assigned to the color that
yes.
I can't conceive of.
Yes.
But that to me is fascinating, that there's someday that we could... That exists somewhere, and that
sure.
somewhere we could access that.
Very much like the ant might get to know what our foot is and come to
appreciate
it.
In that infinitesimal moment before we squish him.
He goes, oh, there's something else!
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Oh, God!
Yeah.
The magnifying glass.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The sun. Oh.
I see the light.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I'm standing in it, and I'm on fire.
The spectrum, I mean, we were talking about dogs. The spectrums
yeah.
that the spectrum that a dog sees... is much narrower than the range of colors that humans
correct.
See.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Having
they're
said that, they're
yep.
not fully colorblind, but they're missing one of the
they
color
only get
rods.
Red and green. They
yeah.
don't get red, green, and blue.
Right.
Red, green, and blue make everything,
yeah.
but they only get red and
so
green,
get,
so they get those
they,
colors.
They do get
brown.
A range of color, but it's a much narrower range than the human
interesting.
Gets.
See,
but
actually,
there are animals that get more colors than that.
And I
there's
could
the
actually
shrimp,
put the
which
dog
gets colors
in,
we can't
in a way. You could put the dog as sort of a midway point between the sloth and the man. Say we're watching TV and National Geographic is on, we're watching the sloth. The dog's in the room with us. And the dog sees that we're watching the noisy box where the shadows are. But he doesn't really understand that much about the sloth, if anything, or we can presume. But he understands we're all together. We're all, you know, in a good mood. He's being well taken care of. And no, and if the sloth was here, he'd probably bite it, you know, but some, or something like that, or chase it or something.
Okay.
But he doesn't really, he's sort of like, he's a step up, he's a leg up on that, because he's in our world and he perceives things differently because he's part of our environment. So I'm just wondering if it's possible for us puny humans to go into that other realm where we would have some sort of understanding of
right.
what, if anything, is beyond there. Because I can't accept the fact that they're, is
I,
nothing. Simply because
someone, I've been tweeting.
Yes, you have.
Which
Real
is a
Max
new,
Maven is his Twitter
yes,
name.
Yes, at Real Max Maven.
Yes.
But,
I don't think
but there's this is a recent thing. But someone just tweeted a quote like a week ago. And maybe you'll look this up and find
it,
and then,
it right
and then we can add the credit for the quote.
Sure.
But the quote was something along the lines of, and I won't phrase it as well as the quote mm-hmm. was, but it was, there are only two circumstances. Either we are the only intelligent life in the universe, or we are not the only intelligent life in the universe.
Uh-huh.
Either situation is overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's Arthur C.
Yeah.
Clarke.
Okay,
oh,
and
nice.
How close did I get?
Very, very close, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, it says, two possibilities exist. I'm going to wait for it to pop up here. So I'm going to, it says, two possibilities exist. Either we are alone in the universe or we are not. Both are equally terrifying.
That was it, yeah.
That's exactly what he said.
That's Arthur C. Clarke.
Someone tweeted that like a week ago or something.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
How did you just find that? What did you? What
I
did
looked
you...
up either we are alone in the universe,
oh,
and it popped
okay.
because you quoted it so well. I was able to immediately locate it.
Anyway,
wouldn't we be selfish?
I thought it was a pretty good.
To think that
yeah.
we are the only
phrase.
Ones.
Well, of course, but humanity is notoriously selfish and self-centered. Look what we're doing to the rest of the world.
But just like, but you know, like, just like the sloth, who's fixates on the immediate, you know, on the leaves and the immediate dangers and everything, we fix on here on what
yep.
on what is our immediate, you know, and that includes, you know, the day-to-day life and families and things like that. When something comes along that opens our horizon.
And we think that, you know, 80 years is a long time span.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like...
Except mm-hmm. when you're talking about John Calvert.
Oh, John Calvert. That one. I know, we lost a great in magic this late September he passed away.
No, just the other day.
No, just
I
more recently
it was
than that.
September 27th or something. I saw
I think it was October 5th.
Oh, well.
It was very recently.
Yeah.
He was 102 years old.
Oh, wow.
Did you know the first magician that he saw perform that made him want to become a magician?
Thurston, I believe.
Yes, it was.
Wow. Thurston.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow, we saw Thurston live. That's
he was 8 years old. His father took him, and that's when he said, I want to be a magician.
Fantastic.
Side note again. I'm the side note girl.
Well, you're a good side note girl, though.
Okay, thanks.
I have a John Calvert side note.
I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, you kind of do. The first time I ever met, I met John Calvert once, and
He was bold.
Very bold. I met John Calvert at a lecture he was giving in Michigan. Someone had hired him, and he came with his wife. And I was the only woman in the room because I went to hear, someone said, you got to go hear this guy. You're going to be glad you did go hear him. One of the magicians advised me well. He was right. And he had given a great lecture. And I walked up to him after to tell him how much I appreciated the things he said. And he said, oh, you're very nice. Whose assistant are you? And I said, I'm not an assistant. I'm actually an up-and-coming magician in my own right. And I'm just kind of learning and finding my way. And he goes, a female magician. He said, how novel. And he was very supportive and very nice. And he said, may I give you a piece of advice? And I said, I would love a piece of advice from you, Mr. Calvert. And he looked at me and said, do not use your body in your magic directly to my tits.
You wrote that in your
I did. I wrote it in my Women in Magic blog. Yes, I did. Thank you for reading that, by the way. That was nice of you. But he said it right to my boobs. And I thought, I've got a choice here. And this is exactly what I said in the article. I just recently wrote an article on women in magic, and I posted it on my website as a response to a very ignorantly, poorly written publicity piece written by a female magician named Mari Tess, who, from what I understand, actually does a decent show. But she wrote a bad article. So, anyway.
Too kind.
Well, I haven't seen her, so it's tough for me to say. Someone came to her defense privately. Someone who had booked her on an international show and said she actually did a great job and held the audience well. I've heard stories to the contrary, but we're going to move on. So,
she's not here for Women in Magic Week.
No, she's not, but neither am I. So,
but you're billed.
I was billed for a minute, and I was like, get me out of here.
You're bailed, he said. Silly.
I am working Women in Magic Week, but not in Women in Magic Week, and I just didn't want to work the bar. So, I wrote this article, and in it, I talked about John Calvert because I said in that moment, I had one of two choices. I could dismiss this guy as a pig or take his advice. Because he was coming, and so I had to make a choice on what was this guy's intention. Was he a lech? Was he trying to get in my pants with this piece of advice? No, not really. Yeah. Did he know what he was talking about? Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And did he make an honest mistake and an unfortunate time while delivering a genuine gem? Yes. And I think that was, you know, take his advice and dismiss what he did, or dismiss his advice because of what he did. And I think I made the right choice, you know.
But
I think the thing is I think that a woman's body is an asset in magic as well, because man, you can't put a between your boobs, can you? No, but I can. Let me say that again.
Some of them can.
Now it's got to stay. I was going to edit it out. Ezra, will you please? I mentioned a magical apparatus. Will you bleep that piece of magical apparatus I mentioned by name out and leave the rest of this in? Yeah. Thank you. So, but anyway, John Calvert was sorry. Well, how did we get
John Calvert? He apparently created. I'm going to stutter my way through this.
Good.
Created you. He formed your career by that statement that he made.
Well, that's okay.
Yes.
End he was of story. Your Joe Chill.
My Joe Chill. he did not kill my parents.
No, but he was your defining moment.
He was one of the defining moments, but I would say that was a moment where I made a choice. I don't know where that's coming from,
I'm
guys.
Just being an idiot.
Okay. Definitely wasn't my Joe Chill. My mom and dad are still alive. Joe Chill, for Trisha Lasky, who may not know, is the guy who killed Batman's mom and dad.
Well, what about your avid sir? Green Lantern reference?
I don't know who that is. Is he the
was the guy who died and then
poor
gave,
Paul.
The,
he gave
the
ring.
You're talking to the wrong people this week.
No, Max knows.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, good.
I thought he was the only guy.
Max and
I
are both
there. You got it. You laughed.
You got it.
And there are people at home going, oh, well, I could sit in that room with Paul.
Yeah, I wouldn't, right. I wouldn't remember the thing about the Guardians if it weren't for the Ben-Gurion reference, which I just think is hysterically funny.
It's cute.
Misty Lee.
And it's pretty rare that we actually have to stop recording the podcast so I can be crass. Yeah.
They're both. It's a
slide. Yeah, except, excuse me, Max Maven and Harry Anderson match my bold in spades while the thing's off.
It's a slide of all that needs to be kept on pause.
Speaking of Harry Anderson, you just reminded me of a story that's a callback to something I said at this point hours ago.
One.
Remember when I mentioned this theory, this short-lived theory about mentalism being a form of psychic rape?
Yes, I do.
So Harry Anderson, this is before Night Court and all of that, and Harry was performing in the parlor at the Magic Castle with his first wife, his wife at the time, Leslie. And they were done for the night, so it was late at night, and Leslie was behind the curtain in the dressing area packing some stuff, and Harry was putting some stuff together in front of the curtain. I came in and wandered in and said hello. And I'm talking with Harry, and I said, so I've got this theory I'm working on, I'm wrestling with this, but it's this concept of mentalism as psychic rape. And it's an upsetting concept, but it's, I think, really interesting, and I'm really delving into it. And we talked about it for 5 or 10 minutes, and then I split. And Harry told me later that after I left, Leslie came out from behind the curtain and said, what the hell is a psychic grape?
Well, actually, it was a short-lived funny face flavor.
There you go.
Late 70s.
Didn't sell well.
Exactly. It was Goofy Grape. Then there was
not one of the
Psychic
better sellers.
Grape, who had a turban and spoke in an East Indian accent. It's kind of perceived to be racist, like Chinese Cherry, and he was short-lived.
It's a lot.
So the story that Harry told, so...
Oh, yeah.
He probably wouldn't be upset if it was on this podcast, but you might think twice.
If he ever, it won't get back to him.
But Harry tells the story that he realized they were living up in Washington, the state of Washington, and he realized that their 25th anniversary was coming up. And he said, hey, our 25th anniversary is coming up. What would you like? And she said, I'd like a divorce. And he said, I wasn't really planning on spending that much. So,
oh, man.
So that was what Harry told everyone shortly after the fact. They're friends again.
Since we're talking about Harry Anderson, and that was a very funny story, who are your favorite magicians? Who do you love of all time? If you had to choose five, you can pick five. And that's not, with the understanding that these aren't the only five you love.
Okay.
But should I ask most influential or favorite to watch? Those
well,
are two separate questions.
They are
right?
Two separate questions. If I had to name the greatest magician I ever saw, probably it would be...
Find out who Max Maven thinks the greatest magician he ever saw was on the next Radio Rashi. This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.